Hi, I'm Rick Reynolds, and I want to welcome you to Affair Recovery Radio tonight. Tonight we have a special treat. Gary and Mona Shriver, who actually created the program Hope and Healing, will be joining us tonight. Due to the fact that they're actually leading a group this evening at this time, they were unable to do this broadcast live, so for that reason we've pre-recorded it, so please don't call in. And I hope as you listen in, you'll be able to find some good tips and gems for your own journey. Have a good week, and we'll be talking to you next weekend. Thank you.
Tonight we've got Gary and Mona Shriver, who wrote Hope and Healing, which is a tremendous program, and I would highly recommend their product to anybody that is listening in. And if you are interested, in fact, Gary, would you mind giving everybody your URL in case people would like to get a hold of some of your product?
Well, first of all, we just want to thank you so much, Rick, for having us here tonight. And I'm Gary Shriver, like Rick said, and my wife, Mona. Say hi, Mona.
Hello.
Hello. And you want our URL. Okay, this is a real easy one to remember. It's hopeandhealing.us. So it's not .com or .org like the other ones, but there's a new one out there now called .us, which I guess is for America. I don't know. It makes sense to me. Easy way to remember it is just remember there's hope and healing for us because it's all about adultery recovery. So there's hope and healing for us. Now, there's no four in there, but it makes it easy to remember the S part. So hopeandhealing.us. That's our URL.
That's pretty neat, Gary.
Well, hey, you know.
He tries.
It works for me.
Well, we would have gone with Calm if it was available, but it wasn't. So
I well understand. I've already been through that. So what in the world made you guys decide to put this course together?
Well, I'm just going to back up because I think that the best thing to do is just to be as transparent as we can about our situation, and then people can kind of catch where we're coming from. I'm going to back up to 1993, so I don't know if any landmarks at that point, but that was I can tell you one in our lives. That was the night I came home and I confessed to Mona that I had been having an affair with my secretary for the last 3 years. And I was a Christian man. I tell you, it was a devastating night, obviously, for Mona and I. A lot of people ask, you know, it's like, how in the world can you be a Christian and carry on an affair for so long? And or have an affair at all, you know? And I can tell you that what left me vulnerable, I think, was the fact that I never believed that I would ever be vulnerable. I was very active in church. I was very active, you know, in ministries, and not this, obviously, this ministry. But this was something that the only thing I can say is it just kind of snuck up on me when I say that is, I didn't ever feel like that was ever going to be a problem. So it just, I don't have a problem in that area. Never have. And now it's not that I didn't, you know, enjoy the company of you know, the opposite sex in my work. You know, I would have friendships with other women, but that was just nothing. I never woke up one day and said, I think I'm going to go have an affair. But what ended up happening was Mona and I were going a million miles an hour, both kind of in our own paths. You know, we had three very active boys that we were, it was a part of our life. Our middle child was kind of a challenge as well, so that put even more stressors on our relationship. But we were just going about a million miles an hour. But what we weren't doing was paying really any attention to us as a couple. We were just kind of going down the road, and I was busy with my business, and I was busy with ministry, and Mona was real busy with her ministry, and she was a nurse at the time. And we were just like I said, going a million miles an hour. And then, so there were needs in my life that weren't really being met, and it's not something that I would sit down and verbalize at the time. It was just, that's just what we believed life was at that point. And so as we're just going down this pathway of life, you know, there was a person that came in my life that was a gal that actually I served in ministry with, and that's where we had met. And we were just, you know, no intentions whatsoever. We were both, you know, very active Christians. But we just became friends, and we just became closer and closer friends as we continued down the path. And then an opportunity came up to where I was needing a secretary at my office, And she was just perfectly fit to Bill because, you know, she understood, she was sharp, and she was, you know, just the perfect fit for that Bill. And actually, Mona and I had talked about, you know, her as to whether or not, you know, and we thought, no, she's a perfect fit, let's just do this, you know. And so we hired her, and life just went on, but we just progressively got closer and closer, and it was just one little baby step after another. And I can't tell you, you know, like I said, we didn't wake up one morning with that intention, but here was a person at work that was hanging on every word, and she was having problems in her relationship at home, and she would share, you know, kind of, and it was almost like this damsel in distress kind of scenario. And we just got closer and closer and closer, and then eventually we fell into a physical relationship. And then at that point, you know, I mean, I absolutely knew at that point I needed to flee. I needed to run. And then, but what happened was there was not a place in my life that wouldn't have been absolutely devastated by the revelation of this affair. I think now my marriage would be toast, you know, but then my ministry, my work environment, my job, my church relationships, I mean, every part of my life was, you know, we were both kind of in together. And so that was one of those things that, in all of my infinite wisdom, and I know the scripture tells us that we are to run, we are to flee, we are to just take off in the other direction and put as much distance as we can between them. But in all of my infinite wisdom, and we resolved that we just would not do this anymore. We knew this was both wrong, and so we just wouldn't do it, but we didn't do anything to change the environment. So we still ended up working together 8 hours a day. We were still very close friends, and then it turned into kind of a cyclic thing to where we would resolve not to do this, and then we would get weak over a long period of time, and then we'd fall, and then we would resolve to not do this, and then we'd get weak, and then we would fall. And seriously, a week turned into a month, turned into a year, turned into 3 years. I mean, it just really was that long.
You know, Gary, it's funny because one of the things I've kind of discovered, and I found this with my own affair, but I've also seen it, you know, a couple of thousand times since then, is that you can never end an affair bilaterally where you and your affair partner agree to end the affair.
Mm-hmm.
If you come to an agreement to end the affair, that ultimately what you're doing is you're both still agreeing covertly to still be in the relationship, even though you're trying to have a different type of relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And ultimately, you know, you've got to kind of blaspheme that relationship. I mean, you've got to get out of there with that thing and just unilaterally say, I'm done.
Yeah, and
I'm out of there.
You got to, yeah, you really do have to run from it. You can't do that. Because, you know, really, you stop and think about it. I never thought about it this way. But you're right, Rick. It's like it's almost adding to the secrecy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if we're going to unilaterally agree to not do this, it's like we still have a secret.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I found. You know, me and my parent partner tried 100 times to end it.
Yeah.
And
just,
only to find that, holy smoke, you know.
Yeah, here we are again, right.
Because we're still working together trying not to have you there. I mean,
right.
That was
amazing. That's exactly what happened to me. And then, well, it ended up what happened, and I hate to even say this, but this is what ended up happening. It was just how God just had to slap me upside the face. Was he actually brought another woman into my life, and this was a person that also worked with us, but she was, you know, she was a non-Christian. I mean, and it was a one-night thing. It was strictly, you know, it was a physical thing, and that was all it was, and that was all it was meant to be, but it was just that one thing that just absolutely, I mean, I walked away from that going, how far have you gone? How far can you go? You know, this is, I was so broken after that. I was a mess, and it was like, what am I doing here, you know? And so I, at that point, I still wasn't doing anything about it, but it was like, it was just God just putting everything in place for me to just be broken.
So Gary, can I ask a question here?
Mm-hmm.
So in the process, because, you know, I noticed that, you know, I really got serious at one point of trying to stop it,
mm-hmm.
only to find that I kept still falling back into it. Were you ever at the point where you were just really dead serious that you were going to stop it, only to find that you fell back into it?
Well, I can't say that I ever was, because I never did. It never happened, Rick. I mean, there were, like I said before, it was a cyclic thing where we both knew what we were doing was wrong, but like you say, we were agreeing to not do this, and it just doesn't work if you keep them in the same environment, under the same circumstances, with the same relationship. You know, you've just got to blow it up. You've got to go in opposite directions. So to answer your question, yeah, we came to that decision several times, but it just doesn't work if you stay in the same environment. You need to just put as much space between you and blow it apart. So what ended up happening after having the one night stand, it was just one of those God things where another employee, young guy, worked for me. He very wise beyond his years spiritually, and he just walked. I was walking into work one day, and he said, I want to talk to you. Very wise beyond his years. I don't know if I said that or not, but he just really was just a neat kid. And he just sat me down one day, and he closed the door, and he said that he believed that I was having an affair, and that I needed to do something about this. And I just looked at him, and for about a millisecond or so, I thought, you know, I could probably use my position of authority to step on this real quick and probably continue. But, you know, I was so broken at that point. I just said, you know, you're right, Lord. It's time for me to just break this thing up and just let the chips fall where they fall. And so I took a deep breath and just said, you know, you're absolutely right. I need to do something about this, and I need to do it right now. So I picked up the phone, and I called my senior pastor, because I knew that if I just left any time between then, I might start wiggling around again. And I just needed to confess this, and I needed to get it out, and I needed to get it all into the light right here, right now, and then be held accountable, you know, for this. Because I knew that if I just left it to myself, I mean, come on, I left it to myself for the last 3 years, and where did that got me, you know? So I picked up the phone, and I called my senior pastor, and I said that we need to meet, and so we discussed it, and he said I could come by after work, and so I stopped by his office on the way home that night, and then I confessed everything to him. And then, you know, he asked me, I remember him, you know, assuring me that this was, you know, obviously the right thing to do is to confess this and get it out and to start to move forward in the light. And then I remember him asking me if I intended to ask my wife or to tell Mona. And I thought, yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess some people don't. I don't know, but I couldn't understand how that could work. If I was going to, I figured I needed to really just get everything out into life.
I don't think there's any way.
Yeah.
You know, if you're really going to sit there and start walking, to not step out.
Yeah. Absolutely. Right. I couldn't agree with him more. So anyway, I said yeah, and so we prayed, and then he sent me on my way, and then I came home that night, and then I remember, you know, I just walked in the house, and all the kids were down, and I walked in, and I sat on the corner of the bed, And I confessed to Mona what I had done, that I had betrayed her, and that if there was, you know, I was really repentant at that point, and I really wanted to try to get through this, and I would do any and everything I could to help her get through it as well.
How old were your kids at that point, Gary?
Boy, Mona, you're the one with all the...
they were 14, 10, and 7.
Yeah, yeah.
All boys.
What she said.
What you said.
What you said.
But what, you know, and at that point, I was just broken before her, and if she would have me, that she would, I would be. I'm here for the duration. I'll, you know, whatever it takes.
Mm. Wow, yeah. So Mona, how was that for you? I mean, was it just crush you?
Well, when Gary walked in the bedroom door that night, I could tell by one look at his face, I could tell that something was horribly wrong, and I knew he had met with the pastor. And I remember thinking, our pastor has died. And when he sat down and he started crying, and so then I knew something was really, really wrong. And he said, I've betrayed you. And I knew immediately what he meant, even though I didn't want to believe it. I don't even remember asking who, but I must have, because when he said her name, I wasn't surprised. Even though I had no suspicions whatsoever, they were very, very good at keeping the relationship separate and compartmentalized.
Right.
There were no telltale signs that I should have picked up on. And she happened to be my best Christian friend at the time, too. So I knew that she and Gary were friendly and friends, but I never picked up on anything inappropriate. Then when he told me about the one-night stand, that was absolutely a God thing, because I knew immediately that God had allowed that to happen so Gary could see just how deeply into sin he had fallen.
Right.
Because you can romanticize an affair. You cannot romanticize or make a one-night stand anything more than it is. So I knew that we needed to talk. I think I was just numb and in shock. And I knew immediately that my life had changed, that it would never be the same again. But I didn't really comprehend what that meant. And I wanted to talk, but I didn't want to talk where the kids were. So I got up and I said, let's go to the office and talk. And I remember I was in bed. I was in my pajamas, and I realized I had to get dressed. And I got up, and I went to change. And suddenly having Gary in the room just felt wrong. And that was a big moment in my brain, because I asked him to leave. I couldn't get dressed in front of him.
Bye.
And that just kind of underscored what was happening. So we went to the office and talked, and it was, you know, do you love her? No. Do you want a divorce? No. Do you want a divorce? No. We, like Gary said, our middle child was a challenge. So one of the things that kept us together during those initial days was our children. Neither one of us wanted to be a single parent to our children. So it wasn't who got the kids, it was who was going to have to take them. And I mean that's really a true thing. Plus, we had enough of our children's friends in the house to know that kids whose parents had divorced, the kids didn't get over it. Four or five years later, they were still crying and missing that parent. And so he came home the repentant sinner. I knew that in a lot of people's minds, I had biblical grounds for divorce, but I wasn't absolutely convinced of that when he came home repentant and wanted to make it work. While Gary was having the affair for 3 years, God had had me on another path, and I had gotten very deeply into Bible study and inductive study, and I had come to learn a lot about God's Word. And so, you know, when you learn that, there's some accountability there. You're accountable for what you know. And I just was so convicted in my spirit that we had to at least try. So we started. Not knowing what to do, not knowing how to do it, and certainly not even knowing if it could be done.
All right.
Because we didn't know anybody who had done it. The only ones we knew about were divorced, or they had stayed together and everybody knew how unhappy they were.
Right.
That is always the problem, isn't it, guys? I mean, it's kind of like, who in the world do you tell, and do you even know anybody who's been through it? And
right.
I mean, I think it's a terrible, it's amazingly isolating.
Yeah.
It really, really
is. It's completely isolating. You know, and that was one of the things that first came up with us, which underscores the creation of this entire ministry that we're involved with, is the fact that right at that point, we were screaming for another couple. Now, we were in with a wonderful Christian counselor. You know, my senior pastor of 1,000-plus congregation assured us that, you know, he knew of people that had come through this, you know. And we're just saying, well, you know, it's not that we don't feel like we're supported from our pastor and from our counselor. You know, we had a wonderful Christian counselor that assured us that we could make it through this. But we just wanted another couple. Just somebody to stare, you know, sit across the table from with a cup of coffee and just say, you know, you can make it because we made it. And look, we're happy. And look, we love each other. And look, we have trust. And we have, you know, all these things that people that are coming through this go, will I ever trust this bum again? You know, how can I ever love this person that's just betrayed me again? You know, these are all really valid questions that the people that are just coming through it. And like you say, Rick, it's so isolated out there that there's nobody there for you. And we said, well, could you please try to come up with a couple? Well, this counselor has told us since that he's worked with literally thousands of couples in the span of his career, and he could not come up with one couple that was vulnerable enough to step forward and be that Jesus with skin on, you know, that we were looking for at that point.
That is so sad, guys.
It really was.
Well, it really was, because we wanted to do it, but we didn't know how.
We didn't know how.
And not only is the event isolating, but the pain is incapacitating.
Right.
And
you're just in shock, you know. You're just, Mona was just in a fetal position, you know, in the bedroom, you know, and I, you know, I don't know. And when we talk to pastors and people, you know, from the church too, that when we, you know, we use a very conservative figure, and we might get into this a little bit later on, but you know, we've just found that a conservative figure is like 25% of the couples in church have been through adultery, are experiencing it at this point, or possibly will in their future, you know. And if you think that 25% is a very conservative number, and you start thinking about how many people that is, and how many pews is that, folks, you know, that could end up having this problem in their relationship. And then the first question that always comes up was, nah, come on, we don't have that problem in our church. And then we just go, you know, you do. It's just they're sitting in the pews right next to you with this great big smile on their face, acting like everything is absolutely wonderful, because they're petrified in the fact that this information is going to get out and spread like wildfire throughout the congregation, and it's just going to be just a sense of they'll be the butt of all of the scandal and the gossip and everything that can happen from this, and so they don't want to take any chances and they don't want to step out, you know?
You know, the same thing, you know, and by the way, guys, I just want to say to those of you who are listening to this tonight, 25% is a not just conservative, it is a very conservative number.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. It's the lowest accepted figure that we have found that everybody will agree to.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, really, most of the figures are closer to 40%,
yeah,
and some of them go as high as 80%.
Yeah,
if you look
yeah,
at all
we've heard
80%.
Isn't that crazy? And so many people just don't think it happens. And then I think it's just a great tool of Satan to keep everybody so in the dark on this one, you know? Because the people that don't... I mean, I think of myself. I was an absolute perfect target for this. You know, when I look at all the people that have been through it and the couples that we've worked with, this is a pretty classic case. And it was all because of my own, I guess, pride would be the base of it.
Pride because, and ignorance.
Yeah, because I'm not going to have any problems in this area. I don't have any problems in here. I'll never do that. And all of a sudden, you know, one little baby step, and oh my goodness, here we are, you know.
You know, one of the greatest things that happened for my wife and I was as we first went into recovery, and we're old folk. I mean, we started in 1984. March 12th, to be exact.
It's funny how those dates stick, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is funny how those dates stick, isn't it, Gary? I mean, those are life-changing moments. And,
yeah,
and it was
January 11th, thank
you. Yeah, and my affair was with my wife's best friend.
Yeah.
And, again, we couldn't find anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And they're there, but we had nobody was talking about it. And we actually went to Nashville to a conference, just kind of a spiritual renewal conference. I mean, we were just desperate. We were hungry for anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the guy we were staying with said to us, hey, I think the conference speakers had cheated on his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you're kidding me.
Really?
You know, or you just think? And he said, well, I just think. I'm not really sure. But he said, I think you ought to talk to him. I said, do you want me to go talk to a perfect stranger and tell him that I cheated on my wife?
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard he did the same.
Yeah.
Well,
of course, Stephanie thought that was a great idea.
Did you do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the problem is?
I told Stephanie, Gary, I said, hey, listen, if God wants this, what will happen is we will see them alone and there won't be anybody else around. Well, there's over 1,000 people at this conference, so I knew there was no way we would ever see them alone, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we're at the conference, we're walking around on the campus, and there he and his wife are sitting under a gazebo, and there's not another person in on an entire college campus. And Stephanie was just, you know, elated. I mean, she was ecstatic, and she dragged me over there. And I said, hey, I hear we might have something in common.
Oh, no!
And he said, yeah, what's that? And I said, I hope I don't offend you, but I cheated on my wife. And he said, yeah, I did too.
Yeah.
Oh, thank God. Not that you cheated on your wife.
Right, really, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and then he said, what have you been doing? And I said, well, I read this book called The Myth of a Greener Grass, really great book, Alan Peterson. He said, yeah, I read that book. And that was about the only book we could find at that point.
Yeah.
I when did Dave Carter's come out? Like,
it wasn't until like 90-something, somewhere in there.
Wow.
Because it was the only thing.
That was our lifeline.
I slithered into the Bible bookstore looking for something, and
that
of course there was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
let's just stop for people listening right now. Dave Carter, and it's called Torn Asunder. Yeah. We know of it, but that's a resource that I think that other people might really be interested in.
Absolutely.
Well, 2 weeks ago, guys, Dave was actually on the radio program.
Oh, see?
What a neat guy, huh?
Oh, I love Dave.
We've had a chance to really get close to him.
Yeah. You know, he's in Ladies Home Journal this month.
Oh, that is so good.
Yeah. Picture and everything.
Right.
Must have been from a long time ago because he looked a lot younger.
Exactly.
<kidding.
laughs> Well, and it was funny, Gary, when we started talking to this guy, he said, I read that book, and I said, you know, there's a chapter in there about a guy that had this, you know, series of affairs. I said, that guy is me. I mean, he's just, and I made Stephanie read it because I just wanted her to understand.
Right.
Yeah.
And the guy I was talking to, Jamie Buckingham, said, yeah, that's me. And I said, yeah, that's me. And he said, no, Rick, that's my story. Literally, Alan Peterson came and interviewed me. That's my story.
Oh, no.
And I thought, what are the odds that I would meet the person, the story that I read about in a book?
Right.
He lived in Florida. I lived in Denver, Colorado.
Yeah.
And God literally put us together in Nashville, Tennessee.
That's amazing.
It really was. And, you know, to have that couple to talk to was just a lifetime.
It was just,
absolutely. Absolutely. Well, what happened in our situation was after, you know, we muddled through with the Lord, of course, who is sufficient, and we also had, like Gary said, good counseling, and then we got released because our counselor said we were stable.
Right. So, what in the world does that mean? But, you know, he said, okay, we feel that you're stable, and then we're going to let you go, and it's going to be like on an on-call basis. You know, it's like if you need anything, I'm right here for you. But, you know, well, the interesting thing, Rick, was a year after that, so now we're 2 years post-Revelation. The phone rings one day at my office, and, you know, Sherman, or I should probably say his name, but I don't know why not. He's a great counselor. Sherman's on line one. Oh, okay. And I'm thinking, this guy hasn't called just to catch up, I'm sure.
Exactly.
And so anyway, I pick up the phone, and I said, and he goes, how's it going? Oh, it's just going fine. Oh, good. You haven't heard from me in a while. Anything. And it took about 45 seconds to get around to the point, and he said, do you remember that real heartfelt need that you guys had for another couple? And we said, oh, boy, surely. And he says, well, are you ready to be that couple for someone else?
Right.
And Mona and I looked at each other and, no. we totally understood why people want to get this behind them and why they want to, you know, reach for the good days and kind of try to forget the bad days and all of this resource or all the processing that goes on through your adultery recovery. But, you know, we knew we needed to put our comfort zone aside, and we knew that we really needed to be obedient because that was one of the things that in the early stages, and we so desired another couple. I remember just having some really, you know, some really spirited prayers with my Lord going, where is the body of Christ in all of this? You know, where are they, you know? And so at that point, it was just like, it was time. You know, we needed to step forward. So we agreed that we would meet with another couple. And so, long story short, I mean, I can go on forever about this, but he put us with another couple. And then he says, okay, now you guys, there's no instructions, there's no nothing. You're not, you know. And then he made sure that they knew that we were not any kind of a counselor. We were nothing more than just another couple that was a little bit further down the road. And that we were here to just answer any questions that they might have. We were an open book to them. And then he says, the other thing I would just say to you guys is keep track of what makes a difference. Keep track of what you think, you know, is helping. And even though, and we found over a period of time, that even though we had very different types of affairs, there were a lot of commonality in our recovery process, things that we would go through, you know. And so as we were kind of discovering those things, as we met together for about a year, then that same counselor called the four of us into his office one day, and he said, okay, you know, I've seen some really tremendous growth in this other couple that you...
Well, and plus, both of us as couples had also seen
the benefit of
together.
I'm just coming alongside of one another, you know, modeling out that Second Corinthians thing, you know, that, you know, spilling into, you know, other people and you know, from the comfort that we've gotten from the Lord, you know.
Right.
And
scripture on your DVDs, by the way.
Yeah. And so anyway, we met with them for about a year, and then he says, he called us all four in one day, and he said, how about you guys doing a group? how about just let me throw a couple of other couples at you that I feel are stable enough to, you know, to really benefit from a group environment. Mm-hmm. And you guys just, you know, let's just see what happens, you know. And then that's when our ministry was born, Hope and Healing. And that's just been an awesome situation because we've had several years of just constant, you know, couples every Thursday or Sunday night, and it's just been a wonderful situation to be able to watch just broken and bleeding couples come in that are just you know, starving for attention. I shouldn't say attention, just wanting to be in an environment where it was safe, and that that's one of the things that we just absolutely strive is it's absolute confidentiality. Their anonymity will never be, you know, given up here. They are safe. They can talk and they can ask any questions that they want, and it's just, they just walk into a safe environment that's just a healing community, you know. Mm-hmm. And then once they come into the groups, and then we have things that we do go through every week.
Basically what we ended up doing is developing a 10-week peer support group ministry. So we'll have what we call two facilitating couples in each group, and those are couples that have been through recovery. And then we'll have 4 to 6 participating couples in various stages of recovery. And we'll meet together for 10 weeks. And we, because it's a brief time of meeting, we very quickly establish the like Gary said, the confidentiality and underscore the honesty. We tell people they don't have to share anything they don't want to share, but what they do share must be truth.
Right.
And so we spend those weeks looking at some of the principles that the original four of us had found impacted our own recovery, or that we felt were very important for couples to look at before they can say, okay, we're done,
right,
we've healed.
Fully realizing now that, for example, that tonight's topic might be on anger or something like that.
Right.
Well, they may
Yes.
not be at that point. So what we do is have a lot of notes and a lot of handouts that go with the videos in our teaching time, and that they can stuff in their binders. And then then they'll remember, you know. And then so it's like, because we realize this process is a whole lot longer than 10 weeks, you know,
right,
to get through this. But as they are traveling down road, they might, you know, come across like, you know what, I remember talking about this in group one night. They can go back to their notes. They'll have the full notes of the teaching time and all the scripture references, as well as all the principles and everything else that's, you know, that was available in the class that night. And then they can use them at that point, you know, down the road. So,
right,
so even though they may not, you know, we may not need it at that particular point, they get reminded later on in the process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's all you can do, you know, is to give those resources so
mm-hmm.
that, you know, because
right,
they'll need them. I mean, to me, the journey is so cyclical, it's not just a straight line.
Absolutely not. Yeah, and we tell them that, you know, that, and that's, I think, two of the biggest things that we feel like we can add to a couple's recovery is that we can help normalize a very abnormal situation.
Right.
And we can help them understand that, no, they're probably not going through, they're probably not going crazy, but they're going through a horrible traumatic event. We also give them permission to go through the process. So many times, because in Christianity this can be considered a get-out-of-marriage card, especially after a few months of hard work when it's still so very painful, those who may have been coming alongside, friends and family who haven't been through this, I mean, Gary and I had our absolute worst time at 10 months. And so what we have seen in other couples is that really difficult time that comes so many months after revelation, those good friends and family will often come at that point and say, you know what, maybe it is too hard.
Right.
Maybe
this is
can't.
Why God did allow divorce under this circumstance. And where we can be in a Hope and Healing group, or just as another couple, we can be that voice of reason that says, no, this is just another piece of the process.
Right.
Don't let it be more than it is.
Right. You know, because the enemy will just have you totally convinced that you can't make it through. Because, you know, I mean, I remember, and what really played into our 10-month problematic time was I was really focused at the beginning. I was going to do any and everything that I could to help Mona get through this, you know. And she was so shell-shocked at that time that, you know, we were coming through this that she was, You know, she didn't even know what to feel yet.
Right.
And I mean, she was numb. And so as I'm trying to build in her, you know, confidence that I'm here for the duration no matter what, and then she is starting to relax a little bit more and thinking that I'm actually am going to stay, and then coming through the initial stages and then finding anger, you know, and then some of the things that can be devastating. Well, you know, 10 months later, I am just exhausted, you know, and I'm saying things like, Lord, is this the life that I can expect for the rest of my life? Am I mm-hmm. just going to be beat like this, you know? And then, you know, what about this, Lord? You know, I'm the one that came home. I'm the one that, you know, I'm getting kind of angry at the Lord at this point, going, hey, wait a minute, you know, I did what I was supposed to. I was repentant. I'm doing everything that I possibly can, you know, in your strength, and I'm broken to you, and it's like, and then it's not getting any better, you know, what's up with this, you know? And, you know, so you get really tired, you know, it's a grueling process to go through, and that's where it was just kind of our worst time. But you know, the amazing thing is it was really, there was one pivotal point at 10 months that we attribute back to the Lord through our counselor. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't have made it if at this one point we were just, man, it was a tough time.
We hadn't had that resource right then.
And that's why we so encourage, you know, when couples come to us and if they're not in counseling, we just go, no, you just do not stop. You do not go past go. You do not collect $200. You get into counseling. Because that's a lifeline. That's something that's so necessary. Because you're going to hit bumps in the road as you process through this. And you need someone that can help you, point you back, you know, and get you on track. And, you know, the funny thing is that at the 10 months, and we were talking about that today, that it was literally diffused in a matter of seconds. Just wise, you know, wisdom from this counselor. And he just went, whoa, now wait a minute, guys. Now think about what you're saying. Think about what, yeah, come on, now, Mona, do you really hear him saying, Gary, is this what you really mean? You know, and then it was like, well, no, you know, and then, okay. So it just, where he, if he wasn't there, I don't know if Mona and I would have heard each other, you know.
Right, I find that, in fact, I had a group, we were talking about that just today, and the problem is, in the moment, you know, what you're feeling is real.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's right. Not truth, but what you're feeling is totally real.
Yeah. Right.
That's right. You know, if you ever lose sight of the fact that perception is reality, whether it's truth or not, doesn't matter. Perception is reality to that person, and you need to respect that. You know?
Right. And so you've got, if there's not a third party out there,
right.
Hang on, that you may be feeling that, and yes, that is true. However,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
And especially we find with anger,
mm-hmm.
you know, that emotion is so strong. And why wouldn't you be angry? You know?
Right, right.
Because
yeah.
there's so much hurt. And but, you know, today we were talking about, you know, that anger is a secondary emotion, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And right.
It's not the primary emotion, but it is definitely what you're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah, yeah. The pain and the anger are huge.
Yeah.
And we don't know what to do with those, especially in Christendom. You know, we expect it to go away. We expect to be able to rationalize it away.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know how to process it biblically.
Right, and I really liked your use of Scripture, Mona, when I was watching the DVD, when you were talking about anger.
Yeah.
And how you incorporated Scripture, and basically, I mean, just you made sure that, you know, look, you know,
yeah,
the sin is the problem.
Right.
Well, and see, that was pivotal for us because I knew, we knew, if we were going to make it, we would have to do it God's way. We had clearly found our way didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't going to go through this rebuilding process and end up with something that was not worth saving.
Mm-hmm.
That was my greatest fear. I was more afraid of not healing than I was of healing. So we really did try to maintain a biblical basis for every step we took. And when we got together with that other couple and started looking at principles, you know, they were practical, they were real. Like you said, the emotions are very real. But we wanted to be able to take that back to Scripture and say, okay, what do we do with these?
Right.
You know, what are the things that are interfering with our processing of this?
Right.
What are the common responses that we're doing? Which ones are good? Which ones are bad? Which ones help? Which ones don't help?
Right.
You know, without being judgmental about having the emotion, but rather how do we deal with it as Christians?
Yeah.
Because it is there.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think, too, that we find that as we are coming through this with couples, too, having the real-life experiences to point back to and how the Scriptures brought us through it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times people will, and I shouldn't say fault, because there's no fault in Scriptures, but I think a lot of times they'll get counsel from people that may not quite get the process or the pain that's coming from this.
Yeah.
And they might say, you know, they'll point them at certain Scriptures, and they'll say, now pray, now if you can just forgive, and then we can just move on with this. Well, you know, excuse me? You know, I mean, we got three days to do this, you know?
Exactly.
You know,
and
it's not that all that advice isn't good. It's just that, they don't understand the process. And so I think that's what helps with our particular thing, is we give them permission to take the time it needs to process through this, you know,
mm-hmm.
to ask the questions that they need to hear the answers to, that no, they're not obsessing. If they ask that question 10 times, they just need to hear the answer 10 times.
Exactly.
You know, and that's okay. That's okay. And no, yeah. And I remember getting so angry as I was going through it. I didn't have anybody to tell me that. This is the fifth time that Mona's asked this particular question, and I know she's going to end up in the fetal position in the bedroom depressed for the next 3 days, you know. I don't want to go back there. Why do you keep asking these questions, you know? And then it wasn't until God just really whapped me upside of the head. She needs to hear it. She needs to hear it again. So if she needs to hear it again, then I need to say it again, because, you know, that's just the way it had to be with us. And so, yeah, so that's what we say in Hope and Healing. It ain't over until you both say it's over. And you just need to keep going back there if that's what you need to do, you know.
So, guys, do y'all try to give tell your guys kind of a timeline that they need to give it at least this long sort of thing?
You know, we try to avoid timelines.
Yeah.
But we do... pretty much down the road, we'll tell them that most therapists say a year to 2 years.
Right.
But that year to 2 years is once you both have started working mm-hmm. together.
Yeah.
Right.
So I was just talking to a gal yesterday, and it's been it's been 2 years since Revelation. But they did nothing up until 4 months ago.
Yeah.
So I told her, you got to throw out that whole 2 year thing, because you're at 4 months.
Right.
So
right.
You're a mess. Well,
yep,
you're 4 months into recovery. That makes a lot of sense.
I find too that when you get into timelines, it can be so daunting for the couple that's just in the initial stages, and they're in shock, and they're going, and they're still maybe, even though they're saying and verbalizing that they are going to get through this, they want to get through this, going to do anything that they can to get through this. But if you come back to them and say, well, plan on a couple 3 years, you know, they might start going, that's too much. I can't do it. I can't live with this intense pain for 2 years. I can't live with this. And that's why I really like to say, no. You got to understand, you know, that it's just you have to look at it as a marathon. It's not a sprint. There is no set timeline. Don't get stuck there, because the second if we were to say it's going to take 9 months and 3 days, well, I'll tell you what, 9 months and 4 days, you'd be freaking out because you still have some feelings. You know what I mean? And in 9 months and 2 days, you'd be going, well, we're not done yet. Well, you know what? Just forget it. Just think about the couple. Think about you guys as a couple and try to get through this, and you're going to process through this, and you're both going to just keep everything in the light and discuss this and keep working through it. And however long it takes, that's how long it's going to take. And you know, and I think, too, that one of the things that I've talked to a counselor before, and he says, well, he likes to say even longer than that. And he says, because once a couple is kind of, established or kind of stabilized, then they don't get caught up in any kind of things. And I kind of agree with that a little bit. If we could just open this thing and say it's a process going to take a long time to go through, because then you're going to have so many good days ahead of you. You know what I mean? You're going to end up with some good days, and you're going to start to feel good about it. And then it's so cyclic, like you said. It can be ebb and flow. It can be a bad day, and then there can be 3 days. And then we have a little trick that we use. It's called frequency, intensity, and duration. And that is, even though you might be in the middle of the war, and you might be having, you know, just it could be just absolutely just a terrible time that you just been through, then if you can just stop and analyze this, was the frequency, is it happening as much as it did a month ago. Well, no, it's only happening three times a day now instead of five.
Okay? Right.
And then it's like, well, is the intensity of the anger as it was? Well, no, last time she threw a knife at me.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm joking, but there's no knives anymore. Okay. Well, you see what I'm saying is even though you might still like feel like you're still in the middle of the war, if you can measure just these little minute improvements,
right,
then you know you're heading in the right direction.
Yeah,
and so now you've turned a very negative scenario into something positive, you know?
So what do you tell your couples, Rick?
I usually tell them, Mona, that it's going to be to expect 18 to 24 months, but you know, at the point of last revelation, it doesn't mean that things are going to be miserable for 18 to 24
right.
months.
Yeah.
You're going to find that your marriage is better than it's ever been.
Ever been, right.
In 90 days, I guarantee you, your marriage will be better than it's ever been. So it will be the best of times, and it will be the worst of times, so please don't think that, you know, you're going to be out of it in 6 weeks or 12
right.
weeks. I mean, because those reminders continually come back.
Right. Yes.
And especially what we tell them is that the one-year anniversary, the intensity of the date is going to spin everything off.
Right, right.
Things get worse at 1 year, and then you'll kind of recover from that, and they'll kind of get... Now you're going to go through all of the dates again for the next 6 months that were really relevant in your recovery. And so those dates will spin you off. But then after you get past that, the 18 months, then typically things really begin to move upward at that point.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's about what we find, too. But I find that, boy, early on in the process, that can be very daunting to a couple when you're starting to talk 18 months, you know. And so I like to just say, I'm just kind of an avid believer in, I don't like the self-fulfilled prophecy thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's always a danger. You're right,
yeah.
Gary.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. And I you know, we've debated in our practice, you know, okay, so what do we say here? Because pretty much all we do is infidelity, and we've got, you know, so many couples, and we just, but the thing we always stress is, please don't think it's going to be bad for this length of time.
Right.
You just just know that you're going to need to really stay focused on God,
right,
and be walking with Him, and hopefully this is going to be a place where your pain is so transformed that it transforms you, and you become an entirely different person as
well.
Amen.
Yes, you do. Amen.
And boy, if anybody is listening to this broadcast right now, here's this, and they have this, you can have a relationship that is just, I really don't like to say better than, because that almost sounds like I'm negating what Mona and I had for the first 20-some-odd years of our relationship. And that's not true. You know, we had a good relationship. We did, you know. I made some mistakes. You know, we had some problems, and we went through that. But I can tell you right now, the processing, the communication skills, the things that, you know, where before I was kind of a peace at any price kind of guy, and I would just like, you know, let's not rock the boat, let's just, you know, let's just get through this and not, well, you know what, I don't do that anymore, because I want to have that relationship. I cherish the relationship that Mona and I have to this day because of the fact that we learned how to communicate. And one of my mantras through this whole process for us was, I don't want to go back to the way it was, because the way it was got us where we are.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be able to peel this onion and look under every rock and really process this and talk about it and put everything out into the light, be able to really analyze what's going on here with us. And then now, if something is bugging me or something is bothering her or whatever, it doesn't get to the point where it's resentment, where we've been stuffing it down. We're talking about it immediately because we don't want to get angry about it, you know?
Yeah, I think one of the ways that it helps me look at that is Gary and I are both better people now.
Mm-hmm.
We both grew as individuals during this whole process. So because we are better people, then our relationship is better. But the relationship we had before was good, too.
Right. And when Mona says better, that's not from a prideful standpoint. That's just from a point of we just can communicate better with one
right.
another. We've picked up some skills along the way that can do this. And you know what? Neither one of us got a lobotomy in the middle of this either.
Right.
We are the same people with the same issues and the same issues that this relationship that played into it that got us vulnerable in the first place are still to this day, and it's something that are clearly in focus, and that's where we build our hedges, you know. That's where, you know, we protect this relationship that way, you know. And so, you know, I think it's really important to say that, you know, we aren't just changed No, we still have the same issues and the things that
bug us. We still have the same personality traits. Now,
right.
The things that were unhealthy in the relationship
could
not
that's
be
fair.
Allowed to continue.
Absolutely, that's fair. I'm
but
sorry.
The personality traits that we have
will
continue, but it's how we deal with those differences now and how we approach a problem that we recognize.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, the one thing we didn't mention, Rick, and we might want to do that, is that there is also a book out there that we wrote.
Yes, there is, and it's a wonderful book, by the way.
It is. Thank you very much. It's called Unfaithful, Rebuilding Trust After Infidelity. And basically, that came out of the groups because we saw the benefit of the groups, and we knew that there were people going through this beyond our geographical sphere.
Right.
And it was a long God story, and I won't take time with it, but that's also available because it addresses, it. We share a bit of our story in terms of principles, too.
If I could just be so bold and interrupt you, one of the things that makes the book unique, and it's not, I'm not trying to sell books here by any means, but I think what's really kind of unique about the book is there's a lot of books out there from clinician standpoints and from different people that are, you know, highly respected and very, you know, very active working with couples coming through adultery. One of the things that really was our heart's cry was, you can make it through. We are just another couple, and we've been through it, and you can get through this. And so even though we discussed the principles that we found that were instrumental in the processing of adultery recovery, it's all set up with stories. It's our own personal stories. It's Gary and Mona's stories. It's not a pseudonym. It's Gary and Mona. And these
are real
couple. Actual mm-hmm. things that we went through when we were dealing with adultery or questioning our faith or whatever. And we felt that was so important because in a Hope and Healing group, like I said, they can be just absolutely dazed and numb from what they're going through at this point, and you can be just bouncing scriptures off them and principles off them, and they're just going, yeah, and all they're hearing is blah, 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 you know. But when you say, yeah, you know, when I was going through the anger and I just wanted to, you know, rah, 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 you know, and Mona, and then, boy, that's when you see the other spouse kind of sit up on the edge of her chair and go, you know, I'm having those same feelings, and they're absolutely engaged. And that's what we felt was really important about the book, is if we just share our stories, they can get to know us and how another couple has come through that, and then they can benefit from those principles that we you know, kind of set up on each one of the chapters.
And so, one of the things I really like about your book is like your reader's guide that at the end of the book.
Oh, okay.
And, you know,
well, we can't take credit for that one, Rick. That was something that David C. Cook Publishing, they felt like, you know what, and they had a guy there that just totally got the book, and he came up with all that. I thought it was awesome.
But I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, really.
Well, I mean, I think it begins to address exactly what you were saying just then,
right,
Gary, in that it kind of makes them begin to think. Having someone begin to ask the right questions, it's interesting. You know, it's Jesus, somebody told me once, and I think it was asked over 187 questions or 180 questions in his life.
The
word only records three questions that he answered directly. And he asked over 220 questions.
Right.
And so to me, the energy is far more in the question than in the answer. I mean, that's what Jesus taught.
Right.
And one of the things about your reader's guide is I think it asks some really good questions. And I think if the hardest thing for couples is that I think they don't know the right questions to even ask.
That's so true, especially when you are enveloped in the pain or the anger.
Mm-hmm.
You can't think straight.
Exactly. And guys, would y'all mind talking just a minute? I loved, Gary, when we were talking on the phone the other day, you were talking about the Focus on the Family experience.
Oh.
You had.
Mm-hmm.
Would you mind telling us about that?
Oh, boy. I wouldn't even know where to start. That was just such an awesome experience. What were you going to say, Moni?
Well, I was just going to say the book got published in 2005, and we met up with a Focus editor during that process, and they considered publishing it, and it ended up happening.
Yeah.
So we were kind of floating around. The book and the ministry had been floating around Focus on the Family since 2004. And then we had gotten a call from, like, the Weekend people, and they had talked to us and interviewed us.
An interview, yeah.
And then we wouldn't hear anything for a long time.
And then we'd get stopped at church, you know, and then the senior pastor would say, why would Focus on the Family be calling me about your character or whatever? You know, and I thought, well, they're checking up on us, Mona. Yeah, so we couldn't know that that was.
But we did. We got an invitation to come and join Dr. Bill Meyer and Dr. Juliana Slattery for the daily broadcast. And we flew to Colorado Springs and did an interview with them. It was quite an experience.
Yes, it really was. We'd never been there before, so we didn't even have a clue of the enormity of the campus. I mean, it was like, what, 40 acres and several buildings? But
we were very delighted with how they did the program. We were there for several hours and thought that they asked all the right questions.
All the right questions.
We were really quite pleased. And then they had just recently started doing a forum, an online forum. I think they had tried one with Dr. Kevin Lehman for a few hours, and it had been quite successful. And so they thought, well, they wanted to do it with our broadcast. We were actually scheduled to be on in January, but we got bumped for a reason. I don't recall what now. But in the meantime, this forum thing developed, and so they decided, well, since we'd be on in February, they'd like to do a two-day forum this time and see what happened.
Because they were concerned, and that's so cool about that, is as he was editing the program, our producer, he was, you know, it was obviously resonating with him and with other people, and he's thinking, what are we going to do if let's just say the statistics are right, and there are that many people in the church out there that could be experiencing this or maybe on the verge of falling into this or whatever, and we resonate with the amount of people that we think, what are we going to do with these people if they reach out to us?
What they ended up doing was, I was pretty much on the computer all day both those days, but they had over 12,000 hits on the forum.
For 2 days.
So now not all of those people posted, because to post you had to identify yourself. But anonymous look-sees and reads were 12,000.
Yeah, they thought that was pretty impressive. That was pretty jaw-dropping. They'd never seen anything resonate like that.
And I guess I could see why people who haven't been through it would be surprised that things would resonate like that, except that those of us who have been through it are quite aware that there are many who have taken this trip. And there is grace, and there is a way out of this, and I really appreciate Gary and Mona sharing their story, because they also have walked this walk and have found a way back out of it by the grace of God. And for those of you who are continuing to try to walk through this recovery process, we have an EMS weekend coming up June 14th, 15th, and 16th, and we would love to be a part of your journey. If you would come join us, just go to affairrecovery.com. That's affairrecovery.com. And find out about our weekend intensive in Austin, Texas. Also, we will be starting another online group in the next 2 weeks. So if that's if travel is an issue for you, please go to, again, our website at affairrecovery.com and sign up for the online courses that'll be beginning, or the online course that'll be beginning in the next 2 weeks. And finally, just continue to remind you that the Harboring Hope group, our support group for hurt spouses, will be coming online at the end of June, we hope, if we can get everything together. So please be praying for us as we move toward that. And if you're interested, go to affairrecovery.com and sign up for our pre-notification list. We'd love to keep you informed with what's coming down the pike and give you a chance to give us feedback as we create this course. So with that, I'll sign off. I hope you guys have a great week, and I look forward to being back with you again next week. May God bless.